Reading from 6th Canto, 16th chapter, verses 40 to 49. Verse 40. O Unconquerable One, when you spoke about Bhagavata Dharma, which is the uncontaminated religious system for achieving the shelter of your lotus feet, that was your victory. Persons who have no material desires, like the Kumaras, who are self-satisfied sages, worship you to be liberated from material contamination. In other words, they accept the process of Bhagavata Dharma to achieve shelter at your lotus feet. So we have a few survivors here from at the end of the Bhagavad course. Thank you all for coming. I think they're... I don't know. Leela Shuka made it. He's leaving tomorrow, right? Leela Shuka. Day after tomorrow? That's it. Day after tomorrow. Okay. So, what do you remember from Burijan Prabhu's class yesterday? I guess you didn't survive that well. Yes, Manamali.
He's criticizing himself.
Who's criticizing? Chichuketu. Chichuketu is criticizing.
He wants some material benefits and Ramangira. Mm-hmm. He's explaining only who are less intelligent.
He was criticizing himself for asking for some material benediction from Angira. Anything else? Yes, Mami.
So, remember what he's saying? There's
five reasons for offenses. According to Jiva Goswami.
One is crookedness in consciousness.
Slackening of devotional practices.
Increase of material attachment.
And four is pride. So these are the five reasons for offenses. Oh, that was four. Okay. Okay, lack of faith. Disappearance of faith is the fifth one. Hare Krishna, welcome. Well, we didn't get the old ones, we got the new ones. Oh, there's reasons? What is that? Results of?
Consequences.
Yeah, consequences of offenses. No, the cause of offenses. Reasons.
Consequences?
Okay, you got it wrong. Consequences of offenses. Reasons for offenses. Oh, the consequences of offenses. Pride and lack of loss of faith and slackening in your devotional practices. And what were the other two?
Ashwadhanam, lack of faith.
Lack of faith we got.
Increase of material attachment.
Okay, these are the cause of offenses.
Results.
The results of offenses, or consequences of offenses.
And the pride.
Pride.
Pride in one's being an exceptional devotee.
Okay, the pride that results from offense is that you are proud that you are an exceptional devotee. So these are the five results of offenses to the who? The Vaishnava, the Lord, to anybody. Results of offenses. Okay, so then Chichuketu, he started to offer his mantras, his prayers. No, not mantras. Now he's offering prayers to the Lord. He's saying that the Lord is conquered by the devotees. The demigods are not independent. The Lord is permanent. Creation is temporary. These are some of the points. Universes are moving within the unlimited Lord. Foolish people worship the demigods. You can just flip it one time. And then we'll be up to date. So today's... If materialistic people worship the Lord, material seeds are fried. Okay, so that's where it brings us up to date. That's good. So now we're going to hear about Bhagavad Dharma, which has many, many different characteristics. as especially we'll find out what this characteristics of Bhagavad Dharma are in the 41st verse of this chapter. So in this verse it mentions that Sankarsan spoke Bhagavad Dharma. When did Sankarsan speak Bhagavad Dharma? When was that? Yeah. 378.
He spoke Bhagavad Dharma to four kumars.
Four kumars, yes.
So in that sense, Bhagavad Dharma is Shruti also.
Yes, it is Shruti.
Spoken.
So he was spoken by the Lord himself. It's spoken by the Lord himself. And I have the quote from 383. Third canto, 8th chapter, verse 3, that Sanakumara inquired from Sankarsan about the truths regarding Vasudeva. In 384, at that time Sankarsan was meditating on his Lord, whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudeva. But for the sake of the advancement of the learned sages, he slightly opened his lotus eyes and began to speak. And these sages, four kumaras, came down from the highest planets to the lower region through the interplanetary highway of the Ganga River. So the hair in their heads was still wet, and they touched the lotus feet of the Lord, and they glorified the Lord in rhythmic accents, selected words full of affection and love, and Sankarsan, with his thousands of hoods, began to radiate in effulgence from the glowing stones on his head. This was 386, these are a series of verses. And 387, then he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to the great sage Sanakumara.
Yeah,
you've got it reversed. 387. So then it was passed down to Sankhyaya Muni and down in the Kumara Sampradaya. So this verse is described that the Lord has a victory. What is the Lord's victory? Srila Prabhupada explains. Yes. Vikunta Pati. Vikunta Vijaya. Oh, Stanam.
Stanam is called Vikunta Vijaya.
Vikunta Vijaya. Vikunta or Vikunta? Vikunta Vijaya. Okay, it's one of the 10 topics, Stanam. And what is this victory? Yes.
He reclaimed the fallen souls.
Yes, he reclaims the fallen souls. When the Lord instructs about Bhagavad Dharma and they adopt it, that is victory, for then he reclaims the fallen souls. So he's unhappy to see all the souls suffering away from him in this material world. And his victory is when they take up Bhagavad Dharma and he reclaims them. So Prabhupada explains further, a devotee following the principles of Bhagavad Dharma feels very much obligated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can understand the difference between life without Bhagavad Dharma and life with Bhagavad Dharma, and thus he ever remains obliged to the Lord. Then here the next sentence, taking to Krishna consciousness and bringing fallen souls to Krishna consciousness is victory for Lord Krishna. So if someone becomes a devotee or makes someone a devotee, then that's Krishna's victory. He's conquering. That is his conquering. Of course, once Krishna conquers us, then we also conquer Krishna after a while by advancing in devotional service. So then Prabhupada quotes in the purport. Savatam samparutam amita bhaktivedakshya haityukyapatyata ayatmas prasiyati. Supreme occupation, dharma for all humanity, is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is a pure transcendental process of religion. So Bhagavatam itself is the highest religion. Srila Prabhupada is saying here, the process is Srimad Bhagavatam. And in Chaitanya Bhagavat, it describes where this Bhagavat Dharma resides. Does anybody have an idea? Yeah, that's Mahabharat. Mahabharat says Dharma, and Chaitanya Bhagavat will say something else. Chaitanya Bhagavat describes where Bhagavad Dharma lives. Yes. Lotus feet of pure devotees? Well, for the devotees, it's in the heart. In the heart. But this is another place where Bhagavad Dharma lives. Okay, I'll sing the verse for you. Sahasya varanna vandu prabhu palaram jahar sahasya mukha krishna yashodam. I offer my respectful obeisances to the thousand-hooded Lord Balaram. His thousands of mouths are the abode of Lord Krishna's transcendental glories. So the word Krishna Yashodham means the abode of Krishna's glories. So the abode of Krishna's glories lives in the mouth of Sankarsan, or Ananta, or Balaram. So Sri Anantadev, this is Chaitanya Bhagavat Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse 12. It says, Sri Anantadev constantly recites Srimad Bhagavatam to the great Brahmana sages headed by four Kumaras. So did you know that? Right now, he's also reciting Bhagavatam to the four Kumaras, constantly. Constantly reciting Bhagavatam. He is the Lord and Guru of the author, who is the incarnation of Vyasadeva for describing pastimes of Sri Gaura Krishna. So he's the Guru of Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur. So, therefore, in the purport it is said, another meaning of Krishna, Yashodhama, is Bhagavatam. Not only do Krishna's glories live in the mouth of Ananta, so does Bhagavatam. It is the abode of Lord Sankarsan's mouths are the abode of Krishna's glories, and they are the abode of Srimad Bhagavatam. But that's where Bhagavatam lives, in the mouths of Lord Anantadev, Sankarsan. So this is from Chaitanya Bhagavat Adi 1.12. The next verse. Mahayakna tuyena mahapriyastane yashayakna bhanda shiyanantabharame. Lord Ananda's mouths are the storehouse of the gem-like glories of Lord Krishna, for valuable jewels are kept in a most appropriate place. So if you want to know where is the dham of Bhagavatam, then you have to go to Anantadev and find it. In his mouth, Balaram, Anantadev, or Nityananda. Verse 41. Being full of contradictions, all forms of religion but Bhagavad Dharma work under conceptions of fruitive results and distinctions of you and I and yours and mine. The followers of Srimad Bhagavatam have no such consciousness. So here Srila Prabhupada is also saying Bhagavad Dharma and Srimad Bhagavatam are synonymous. See, Bhagavad Dharma, Srimad Bhagavatam, both the same thing. They are all Krishna conscious, thinking that they are Krishna's, and Krishna is theirs. There are other low-class religious systems which are contemplated for the killing of enemies or the gain of mystic power. But such religious systems, being full of passion and envy, are impure and temporary. Because they are full of envy, they are full of irreligion. So without looking at the board, you can look at the book if you want, or your computer, but don't look at the board. Yes, hard not to, huh? Since I said not to. What are the characteristics of Bhagavad Dharma? Of course, those of you who have a Shruti Dhar memory and looked at the board, then you'll know. What are characteristics? Yes, Lila Shipa?
Acting for pleasing the Lord.
Acting for pleasing the Lord, okay. Prashanta? Durbodham, okay, very difficult to very rare, yes?
Free from envy.
Free from envy, okay, yeah, that's good. Non-envious. Who else had something?
Nobody.
Transcendental, yes?
Free from duality.
Free from duality, yes?
Beneficial for everyone.
Okay, so let's look at the board and see what, this is from the purport actually. Number one, Prabhupada says, no contradictions. Number two, God is one, and God is for everyone. Number three, religion means to follow the laws of God. That's Bhagavad Dharma. Four, you have no enemies. Five, it's non-sectarian. And the verse for non-sectarian, everything belongs to Krishna, should be used in his service. Does anybody recall which verse Prabhupada quoted to explain how it's non-sectarian? There's a verse that we're all familiar with.
Shama, no, but that's a nice verse. Shama Eva Kevlam. Non-sectarian. Yeah, it starts with... no, but it starts with Sar... Huh? No, is that right? It's not from Gita and it's not from Bhagavatam.
It's not from the Gita? No.
It's a higher... No, it's not from Nectar of Devotion. Yes.
Sarvam Kalavidam
Brahma. Yeah, you got it. Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma. That's the verse which Prabhupada said shows that Bhagavad Dharma is non-sectarian, and that verse, Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma, everything belongs to Krishna, should be used in his service. So what an interpretation of Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma. Next time you have to speak on that, so you can explain how it's a characteristic of Bhagavad Dharma. And the characteristic is that it's non-sectarian. Everything's Brahman. So everything should be used for Krishna's service. Therefore, it's non-sectarian. So, purport, how it has no contradictions. Prabhupada says in the beginning, conceptions of your religion, my religion, are completely absent from Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma means following the orders given by the Lord, as stated in Gita, Sarva Dharma Kritya Mamekam Sharanam Vrcha. Okay, so following the orders of the Lord, that would be Sarva Dharma Kritya. And also, what's another verse for following the laws of God? Dharmam Prasapsha Bhagavad Pranitam. So then, the next thing was God is one and God is for everyone. Therefore, everyone must surrender to God. That is a pure conception of religion. So then, this is all in the first paragraph. Religion means to follow the laws of God. Whatever God orders constitutes religion. Dharmam tu saksha bhagavat pranitam. In Bhagavad Dharma, there is no question of what you believe and what I believe. Everyone must believe in the Supreme Lord and carry out His orders. Anakuyena krishnanu shilanam. Whatever Krishna says, whatever God says, should be directly carried out. That is dharma, religion. Did I miss that?
No, it's just the sentence, it's just there.
Which sentence is that?
The sentence you just read, one before that.
One before that.
Maybe
there is no question of what you believe, and what everyone must believe in the Supreme Lord.
So before that it says, there are many activities directed against such religious systems.
I don't have that. I don't have that sentence in my book. Do you? You have that sentence? There are many activities.
It goes like that.
In Bhagavad Dharma, there is no question. Whatever God orders constitutes religion, dharmanta sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Then I have, in Bhagavad Dharma, there is no question of what you believe in. You have something else.
It's the end of the second paragraph.
Oh, yeah, you're in the second paragraph. That's why I'm in the first paragraph. Gotcha. Okay. He repeats. One must give up the idea of my belief and your belief, right?
The many activities that
against such religious systems. Yeah, well, he explains that in the purport of paragraph 2. So, no enemies. Prabhupada says, if one is actually Krishna conscious, he cannot have any enemies, since his only engagement is to induce others to surrender to Krishna or God. How can he have enemies? If one advocates Hindu religion, Muslim, Christian, this religion, that religion, there will be conflicts. History shows the followers of religious systems without a clear conception of God have fought with one another. There are many instances of this in human history, but systems of religion that do not concentrate upon service to the Supreme are temporary and cannot last for long because they're full of envy. Okay, so there are many activities directed against such religious systems. So that means that they're competing with each other, that one's envious of one, one's envious of the other, and so they fight. Yes?
I was thinking of Rupa Shikshana, Mahaprabhu Rupa Goswami, Vedanishta Nadi Adhikarada Bhutamani.
Oh, Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami.
19146.
19146.
It says, Vedanishta Nadi Adhikarada Bhutamani, Vedanishta Papakuli Dhamma Nahidam. He says that amongst those who follow the Vedic principles, they're considered civilized.
Those who follow Vedic principles are considered civilized.
Unfortunately, Adhikam is almost half. They follow Vedic principles by doing lip service.
Yes, almost half they follow just by giving lip service.
And in the name of the Vedas, Veda Nishida. Nishida is pollution. In the name of the Vedas, they perform sin.
And then in the name of the Vedas, they perform sin, those who give only lip service.
And then Dharma Mahigan, Mahaprabhu says to Rupa Goswami, this doesn't count as Dharma.
These are not known as Dharma. So they might even be called Vedic.
And they call themselves
Vedic. They call themselves Vedic, but they're not even Dharma.
They don't follow.
So this is... That's, thank you for that. That's very nice. So this is an example of... So we don't want to name any names, but what are some other examples of this type of religion? We don't say, you know, the name of the religion, but just to give some examples of... No names. No, the activities. Yes.
Some people in the name of religion, they see that anyone not following their religion is a enemy.
Okay, in the name of religion, they see that anyone who's not following their religion is an enemy. Okay, if you're not, even within their religion, they see if you're not my particular sect of this, like Christians fighting. Catholic and Protestants, no names, but even among themselves, if you're a different sect sometimes, then they find. You have something more?
So they create a whole war.
Yeah, they create a whole war for them. Yes, Prashanta.
They always advocate that our way is the only way.
Our way is the only way. Okay? My way or the highway? If you don't surrender, if you don't be saved, then you go to hell. Either you accept or you go to hell. Then Shuka.
Yeah. In some religions, they make a point that everything is created for our enjoyment.
Yes. Their religion is that everything is created for our enjoyment. So that would be very difficult. Yes.
God has a rival, Satan.
What's that? Oh, God has a rival, Satan.
And they are competing.
And they're competing with each other. Okay, so that's one idea also, that there's a rival to God.
Whoever is not in our sect, they are from Satan.
Okay, and if you're not with God, then you're with Satan. Yes.
There's also pantheism.
Pantheism.
They believe that God is everywhere.
God is everywhere, in the trees, in the clouds.
So in that sense, he has been deprived of his personality.
Yeah, so they deprive him of his personality by saying, if he's the dog, he's the tree, he's the cat, he's this, he's that. But what is he actually?
Prabhupada takes that nicely in the second canto. He says, okay, if he's everywhere, one or two of them everywhere, and then you sing the truth of God.
Oh, that's cool. So Prabhupada defeats that. He says, if God is everywhere, then why don't you engage everything in his service? Yes, but the problem is, if everything is God, they don't know which one to engage a service in. Is it the dog? Is it the cat? Is it the tree? Is it me? Yeah, that's the problem. But they should engage everything in his service. Yes, anything else? Okay. So here, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, paragraph 3, Bhagavad Dharma is not a concocted sectarian belief, for it entails research to find how everything is connected with Krishna, Ishyavashamidam Sarvam. According to the Vedic injunction, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, Brahman the Supreme is present in everything. Bhagavad Dharma captures this presence of the Supreme. Well, that's a very nice sentence. That Bhagavad Dharma, God may be everywhere, but can these people capture God? Can they actually make you feel the presence of God in the tree or this or that? But only Bhagavad Dharma can do this. It captures the presence of the Supreme. And it's non-sectarian. It may be found in any religion. You may find someone who is a Christian or a Muslim, and they may have this. They may be following the laws of God. Bhagavad Dharma captures the presence of the Supreme. Bhagavad Dharma does not consider everything in the world to be false. So this is not Mayavad. Because everything emanates from the Supreme, nothing can be false. Everything has some use in the service of the Supreme. For example, we are now dictating into a microphone and recording on a dictating machine. Thus we are finding how the machine can be connected to the Supreme Brahman. Since we are using this machine in the service of the Lord, it is Brahman. So the microphone is Brahman.
424.
Yes, 424. Bhagavad Gita. This is the meaning of Sarvam Kalvidam Brahman, Prabhupada says. Everything is Brahman, because everything can be used for the service of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is mithya, false. Everything is factual. So Prabhupada said in one lecture, the Mayavadis, they see Maya everywhere. But the Vaishnava devotees, they see Krishna everywhere. So that's the difference. So how do they extract the essence? How do the devotees extract Krishna's presence from everywhere? Krishna is everywhere, right? So how do the devotees actually capture the presence of Krishna? This is what, actually it says a pure devotee can do this. In first canto, he can extract Adipurush.
Using everything in Krishna's service?
Using everything in Krishna's service, yes.
Verse talks about how the fire is present in him.
Yes, that verse. I was thinking of that.
Prabhupada says that he extracts his devotion out of the living entities like wood, like ears.
Yes.
By injecting the messages.
Yes. So the pure devotee, he can extract devotion from the heart of the living entity by injecting the message in the ear, in the wood-like ears of
a
living entity.
There's a verse, huh? In the second chapter.
Second chapter, first canto.
Like the fire from the...
Yeah, there's firewood, there's fire, and there's... It's talking about super soul. The super soul in everyone's heart. So it says that his divine grace, he says that in there, his divine grace can extract devotion or something like that. He can inject by injecting in the ear. What is it? 1, 2, 24. So that's how the Bhagavad Dharma, well, Bhagavad Dharma captures the presence, and the devotee captures the presence of the Lord everywhere. He can capture His presence. And we felt like that with Srila Prabhupada, that wherever Srila Prabhupada was, then Lord Krishna was there. Virajan Prabhu said he had a realization, I remembered. He said in one class that his feeling of being with Srila Prabhupada, when he first did deity worship, when he went into the deity room, he had the same feeling. That same presence of Krishna was there. In his presence with Srila Prabhupada and then going in the deity room. So the pure devotee holds Krishna in his heart. So therefore he can give Krishna and Bhagavad Dharma. So then the fifth point, sixth point, Sarvot Krishna, best of religions, because as you said, non-envious. Prabhupada says, because those who follow Bhagavad Dharma are not envious of anyone. Pure Bhagavatas, pure devotees, invite everyone without envy to join the Krishna conscious movement. A devotee is therefore exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. He is the friend of all living entities. Therefore, this is the best of all religious systems. Whereas so-called religions are meant for a particular type of person who believes in a particular way, such discrimination has no place in Krishna consciousness or Bhagavad Dharma. 1, 2, 32. If we scrutinize the religious systems meant for worship of demigods or anyone else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we will find they are full of envy and therefore impure. Okay, so this is a warning. So this is bhakti, Bhagavad Dharma. I have here an excerpt from diary of Indudum Maharaj. He was at the Woodstock Festival in Poland, and he was visiting the bathroom, the public restroom near the festival grounds, and he complimented the old cleaning lady who was there. And he said, "This is the cleanest public toilet I've ever seen in Poland. Thank you very much." So she said, "I've been working here 10 years and you're the first person to ever thank me. But I'm not surprised. You're good people. I've watched your festival from a distance for years now. Everyone leaves your program smiling." So then he invited her for dinner, but somehow he came late to pick her up and he missed her. But then in her place he found an old man. And he asked, "Do you know this old woman?" And she said, he said, "Yes, she's my wife. We've worked together here for years. Can you imagine that?" And he said, "No, I can't." Then he said, I immediately regretted my answer. I was afraid I'd insulted the old man. So I tried to smooth things over. I don't think there's anything wrong with working here. I meant to say, the young man said, don't worry. I know it's not the best work and it doesn't pay well, but we get by. He paused. And do you know how? He asked. I was afraid I'd put my foot in my mouth again, so I didn't answer. And he said, how we get by reading Bhagavad Gita. He said, yes, your Gita makes sense of everything. You can clearly understand the soul by reading Gita. No other religion has such a concise explanation of the soul, reincarnation, and karma. If a man kills someone and then himself dies soon after, how will he be punished unless he's born again? Reincarnation explains why some people are born into misery and others into good fortune. Sindhu Dumnamhar said, for a moment I thought I was dreaming. Was the old cleaning man really speaking Vedic philosophy? Then he goes on, take the material body. It's only dead matter. How can it be activated unless there is a presence of the soul? That's why it's wrong to kill animals. They also have souls. God created beings so they could live, not so they could be killed. Maharaj said, I was struck by his clear logic. Then the man goes on, a man works all his life and he gets a pension to live out his remaining days. But the cow gives milk all her life and then people kill her. It's wrong. And the whole world is suffering the reaction in the form of wars. Therefore, God sends messengers at different times to enlighten us to these truths. But people just don't listen. What can be done? I turned to the old man, Maharaj. But there is an answer. We can have festivals like these to help people understand. And the man said, yes, you're right. Go on with your festivals. Let people hear the truth. So Maharaj said, I had to return to the festival to give my stage lecture. One more thing, I said. Can you and your wife be my guests for dinner tomorrow evening, the last night of the festival? He looked surprised. Please, I continued. We'd be honored. All right, he said. Thank you. He stood up, picked up his bucket, and he said, I didn't know what real religion was until I read the Gita. He said softly, half to himself, as he disappeared into the toilets. Bhagavad Dharma. Realization. So this is Bhagavad Dharma, verse 42. How can a religious system that produces envy of oneself and of others be beneficial for oneself and for them? What is auspicious about following such a system? What is actually to be gained by causing pain to one's own self due to self-envy and by causing pain to others? One arouses your anger and practices irreligion. So here's a very heavy statement about other religions that don't follow the path of Bhagavad Dharma. So Prabhupada in the purport, any religious system but the process of Bhagavad Dharma, service as eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a system of envy of one's own self and of others. For example, there are many systems of religion in which animal sacrifices are recommended. Such animal sacrifices are inauspicious both for the performer and for the animal. So why is it inauspicious to do animal sacrifice? We know for the animal why it's inauspicious, but how about for
binding?
For your, it binds you, okay? Do you know the Vedic, even the Vedic is condemned in this verse, even the Vedic process of animal sacrifice is being, now everything is being, now this is Dharma, Projita, Kaita, Vacha, all cheating forms of religion are being thrown out, including Hinduism, including the Vedic process. This also being thrown out. Demigod worship, animal sacrifice. So why? Is it okay? It's binding? Anything else? Yeah. No. Yes.
It's very risky.
It's risky, yes.
Not generally.
If done properly, the animal gets benefited.
In order to do that, one has to be very qualified.
Yes.
Most people don't do it or are not qualified. So
yes.
Get a good share.
Most people are not qualified to do it. So they make mistakes and they get the reaction. And for the goats offered to Kali, what is the word that they say? They whisper. You have to whisper in the goat's mouth. Mamsa. Mamsa means meat, but it also means now I am sacrificing you, but in my next life, you can sacrifice me. Mom and Sa, me and you. So this is envy. You're envious of the animal. So then you do the animal sacrifice. So at the paragraph 3, near the end, Prabhupada says, sometimes animal sacrifices are performed very gorgeously with grand arrangements for worshipping goddess Kali, but such festivals, although performed in the name of yajna, are not actually yajna, for yajna means to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it is recommended in this age specifically, yajnai sankirtana prayaya janti hi sumedasa. Those who have good intelligence satisfy yajna purusha, Vishnu, by chanting Hare Krishna mantra. So then at the end of the purport, killer of any animal must be killed in his next life by the same animal. This is a law of nature. So even if you do it properly, you have to be killed by the animal in your next life. One must follow the instructions of Lord Sarvadharma Pritija Mamekam Sharanam Raja. If one follows any other system of religion, he is subject to punishment by Supreme Personality of Godhead in many different ways. Therefore, this is the explanation of why, if one follows a concocted system of religion, he is envious not only of others, but also of himself. Why? Why is he envious of himself? We just punished. Yes. Yeah, he's punished. We just read he gets punished in his next life. What does it say in Isha Upanishad? Atmaha. Atmaha. Killer of the soul. And also there's a verse about leading others to hell. Yeah, Pashukunam. Yeah, 10.14, that's Bhagavatam. So here, we read about Sankarshan. For those who came late, tell us, where does Srimad Bhagavatam live? What is the abode of Srimad Bhagavatam? The mount of Anantashesh, that's where Bhagavatam lives, in the mouths of Ananta. That is Krishna Yashodham. His mouth is described Krishna Yashodham, the abode of Krishna's glories, or the abode of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada is using Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Dharma interchangeably here. So here it says, the Lord becomes angry in this verse. If you follow some concocted religion, who gets angry actually? Is it here? Sankarshan, yes. Rouses your anger. He's praying to Sankarshan. If someone follows these concocted systems of religion, then Sankarshan gets angry. He gets angry, and then at the devastation, he finishes everyone. So now he's restraining his anger. We know he's in his abode, and he's keeping himself cool, restraining his anger, living in the water. So this is very nice for the material world. Verse 43, my dear Lord, one's occupational duty is instructed in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita according to your point of view, which never deviates from the highest goal of life. Those who follow their occupational duties under your supervision, being equal to all living entities, thank you, moving and non-moving, and not considering high and low, are called Aryans. Such Aryans worship you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in verse 41, we were enumerating all the characteristics of Bhagavad Dharma. Now in this verse, we are enumerating the characteristics of who is an Aryan. So here we have four characteristics. One, who follows Bhagavad Dharma. Number two, he follows Vanashram Dharma. Number three, he's equal to all living entities. Number four, not deviating from Krishna's instructions. So these verses are full of information, full of knowledge, because these words we have to be familiar with. We hear the word Aryan so many times. Yes. Yes, of course, Shiva is Aryan. Shiva, of course, he's the best Aryan. He's the best everything. Best Vaishnava, best Aryan. He's the best of the Aryans. Because he follows, he does all these things perfectly. And he's also Dharma Vatsala. Just like Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala, Lord Shiva, we learned in 4th canto, he's Dharma Vatsala. He's a follower of all religion, and whoever follows religion is very dear to Lord Shiva as well. So this is from the purport again. In paragraph 1, the first point, one who follows Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma and Krishna Katha are identical. So here we're getting a lot of synonyms for Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma, Krishna Katha, Srimad Bhagavatam. So Bhagavad Gita must also be Bhagavad Dharma. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to become a guru and preach the instructions of Krishna everywhere from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Puranas, Vedanta Sutra, and similar Vedic literatures. Aryans, who are advanced in civilization, follow Bhagavad Dharma. Prahlad Maharaj, although merely a child of 5 years, recommended Prahlad Maharaj preached Bhagavad Dharma among his classmates as soon as the opportunity was afforded by the absence of his teachers from the classroom. He said, from the very beginning of life, from the age of 5, children should be instructed about Bhagavad Dharma, because the human form of life, which is very rarely obtained, is meant for understanding this subject. Does anybody know an example of somebody preaching in their school? Children. Children preaching in... Any of you preached in your school when you were... Anybody tried preaching in your high school or your... No. Anyway, I have an example here. And this is again from Indradyumna Maharaj's diary. He was at one of the places, they were doing their summer festival in Poland, and he was traveling one city to another. And he was in the crowd, he was looking for some adult to preach to. Then he heard a voice, "Hare Krishna, Srila Gurudev." And he couldn't tell where the voice was coming from. Then a little hand with some flowers came in front of his face. He said, "This is for you." I looked down, I saw a little girl dressed in a sari with a big smile on her face. I smiled back. "Well, thank you," I said. "What's your name?" "My name is Camila. I'm 9 years old. Don't you remember me?" He said, "Well, not exactly. I meet many children in my travels, but thank you for the flowers." She was just a child, so I wanted to finish it quickly and find a serious adult to preach to. She said, "We met 2 years ago at another of your festivals in the city. I saw you chanting in the rain that day. When my neighbors told me they were going, I wanted to go." He said, "You saw us chanting in the rain?" I thought about my hesitancy to join the kirtan in the bad weather that morning. "Yes," she said. "And that night at the festival, when you saw I was interested, you talked to me and told me stories about Krishna. Suddenly, I remembered the little girl. She said, I never forgot you. I pray to you every morning when I wake up and every night before I go to sleep." My eyes suddenly stopped searching the crowd for an older guest, and I looked down at her. "You do?" I asked. "Oh, yes," she said. "I'm so thankful to you." "You are?" I asked. "Yes," she said. "And as I promised, I've been chanting 3 rounds of japa on the japa beads you gave me every day, Srila Gurudev. This time, I would like to ask you for a spiritual name." "Are your parents devotees?" I asked. "No." "And they're divorced. I live with my mother." "Oh, I see," I said. "Well, what will she think if I give you a spiritual name?" So she said, "Why don't you ask her? I brought her to the program. She's just over there. I'll go get her." She ran off. Within moments, came back with her mother. "I'm pleased to meet you," I said, as I shook the mother's hand. Mother said, "I'm more than pleased to meet you. You've done so much for my daughter. She loves you very much. The walls of her room are covered with your photos. I must admit, when she came home from your festival 2 years ago, I was quite upset she had gone without my permission. But my irritation soon changed into astonishment. She used to be such a naughty child, so difficult to handle. But after her one meeting with you, she changed so much. So how could I complain when she prayed to you every day and chanted on the beads you gave her? She's even reading your books, your movements books. As an 8-year-old, she couldn't understand much. But what she did understand, she shared with her friends at school. One day in religion class, when the priest was speaking unfavorably about other religions, my daughter stood up and challenged him. 'All religions are good,' she said, 'and people have the right to choose the one they want to follow.' When she told him she was a follower of Hare Krishna, he went speechless. She was asked to leave the class for good. And recently I was called before the school administration. They told me if she continues preaching about Krishna to her schoolmates, she'll have to leave the school permanently. They know she doesn't eat the meat served in the cafeteria, but brings it home and gives it to the family dog. What would they say if they knew she doesn't even do that anymore? She makes little balls of sweets, offers them to your picture, and then gives them to the dog. I have the fattest dog in the neighborhood." But believe me, I'm not upset. I realize I have a special daughter. She's taught me so much. Because of her, I'm now reading Bhagavad Gita. The little girl was standing before us, softly chanting on her beads. She's been so anxious to meet you. Again, she cannot sleep at night. Kamila smiled and looked up at me. Shila Gurudev, I'd really like to have a spiritual name, but someone told me I have to chant 16 rounds and be your follower. He said, children can get spiritual names, and I can't imagine a better follower than you. I thought for a moment, we'll give you the name Shyam Lila Dasi. And she bowed down, and she had tears in her eyes, and said, I'm so grateful. I looked at her mother, and we're both grateful to you, I said. Shyam Lila hugged me, said goodbye. I looked to the sky and vowed I would never again hesitate to go out and preach the glories of the Lord, even in the rain. So here's a verse from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Dasyam te kripaya natta devi devi mahabhava patitanam premadatta syatrayache punapuna mahabhava. I beg you again and again, please be merciful and give me your service. For you are the bestower of love of Krishna to those fallen into the jaws of the serpent of samsara. So this is preaching the Bhagavad Dharma. There's no age limit. There's no qualification. You can be a toilet cleaner. You can be a child. Anyone can preach about Krishna. So here, there's a Sanskrit word in here, in this verse 43, which I picked out here. And it's a word that we heard a lot about in the fourth canto. Can anybody pick this out? This is kind of a two word there. Apritaktiyo, yes. Apritaktiyo. What does that mean? Sankirtan? Don't distinguish between lower and higher. You're not a separatist. So this is paragraph 3 is explaining this point here, that the members of human society who strictly follow the principles of Bhagavad Dharma and live according to instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called Aryans or Arya. So this is perfect. They never deviate. They don't discriminate between trees, animals, human beings, and other living entities. Pandita Samadarshana. Do not even kill a small plant unnecessarily, not to speak of cutting trees for sense gratification. So stira chara sattva kadam besh apitak diya. They don't see the difference between trees, animals, insects, human beings, or anything. So, of course, Prabhupada says, Aryans do not distinguish between lower and higher grades of life. All life should be protected. All living beings have a right to live, even the trees and plants. This is the basic principle of an Aryan civilization. Remember who was, yes, Sankirtan? Who was preaching like this recently in our class? I mean, one of the personalities of Bhagavatam was preaching to somebody like this, yes?
So, I preached to the
Prachetas. Who was preaching to the Prachetas? No. Soma. Because he's the head of the trees. He's the lord of the trees, so he wanted to protect the trees. And he's saying, the trees are your citizens. How can you kill them? They're also born in your kingdom. So this was actually the king. The king was not only protecting human beings, he was protecting the trees, he was protecting the animals. Everyone who is born in the kingdom must be given protection by the king. So the Soma. So, of course, the best example of someone who had this consciousness of non-discrimination was our Srila Prabhupada. So I have a little story, today's story day, a little story about Srila Prabhupada and bedbugs. Bedbugs. You know what bedbugs are? They're little round bugs. They come in your bed when you're sleeping and they bite you. And they have no, hardly any skin. They're just like a skeleton, but as soon as they bite you, they get fat and they fill out like that. So Prabhupada sometimes uses an example as artificial renunciation, that they renounce, but then when there's a chance for sense gratification, they get fat again. So this is a story about how Prabhupada was loving the bedbugs. And this happened, oh, I don't know when, it was like early, maybe even in the 60s. And this was by Govindadasi. Prabhupada was very, very sick. He had a heart attack, and then he went to India, and then he came back to recuperate. So here he's recuperating in somebody's beachside house. So she said she was sleeping on a blanket on the floor in the kitchen, and the bed bugs were a problem. Govindadasi said, I would wake up in the morning with red bites all over my cheeks. I tried to turn the other direction with my feet to the wall, and then my feet would be covered with red bites. Swamiji asked us how we were doing, and seeing the red marks on my face, I explained to him, some bugs were biting me. He laughed and said, pointing to his window, yes, they also come here, but I stay very still. And when they think I'm asleep, they come. Then I catch them, and I chant to them, and then put them out my window. By the breathing, they know just when a man is sleeping, but I can trick them, Prabhupada says. His eyes sparkled as he told how he tricked the little bedbugs by pretending to be asleep. So that night, I tried tricking them, but I fell asleep and got bitten as usual. And the next night, and again, and again, and again, to no avail, I couldn't catch them. A few days later, I told Swamiji, I've tried every night to catch them, but I can't catch them. I breathe softly and try to pretend I'm asleep, but they're too clever. They don't come and bite until I'm really asleep. I don't know how you do this. Swamiji laughed and wagged his head side to side, saying, yes, you have to be very expert. So then she writes, thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for showing me your compassion even for bedbugs. You cared even for these living entities who came to you only for biting and sucking blood. And you gave them your mercy as surely as those who came for serving. Thank you for showing us how to live, how to love all creatures, and how to give the benediction of the holy name. This is not only one example. There are so many examples of how Srila Prabhupada, I know Narayana was telling in his memories of Prabhupada how he was sitting with Prabhupada across from his table, and Prabhupada was pointing to his desk. Do you see that ant? And Narayana didn't see the ant. And so he didn't know what to say, yes or no, or maybe. So he just made some kind of sound that could be taken as yes or no, or maybe. Because he didn't want to lie, he didn't want to displease Prabhupada, so he just said something like, ugh. Said some sound. And so Prabhupada said, you know what your duty to that ant is? And then he was thinking, I can't even see the ant, and now I have a duty to the ant. What's my duty to the ant? He was really racking his brain. He said, no, Srila Prabhupada. The Prabhupada says, you have to make him Krishna conscious. That's your duty to that ant. So Prabhupada was, you have to chant to him. So he started chanting to the ant he couldn't see. And Prabhupada was happy. At least he made Prabhupada happy. So this, so many stories like that. There was one bug, another bug, in his room in Los Angeles, his servant was Shruti Kirti, and then Prabhupada said, you see the bug? Again, he said, no, I don't see. And then Prabhupada was pointing where the bug was. Finally, he saw this really small bug. Prabhupada said, he's sick. And Shruti Kirti said, really? Prabhupada said, yes. He's moving very slowly. Take him and put him on a maha flower. So that was Srila Prabhupada. He had this. He was taking care of everyone. He did not discriminate. And I think my son or somebody was telling me the other day that the biggest population is insects. Bigger than anything is insects. Biggest population on the earth. So Prabhupada was taking care of even the insects. Like, what a consciousness like that. Actually, my son also, he's very sensitive in that way. He has some very good qualities. He's sensitive with the plants. He has that too. He was being a gardener, but then after a while he couldn't do it anymore because it was so painful for him to take out the weeds. So whenever he would take out, now he had to take out a few weeds, he said, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Every time he takes out a weed. And one time I brought home some lettuce, you know, beautiful head of lettuce, and it had roots. He said, we can't eat it. It has roots. Let's plant it. Anyway, that's, you know, so these children, you know, they have their bad side, but they're also, there's some very deep realization of Krishna consciousness in the devotee children that we don't have. You know, I just would eat the lettuce. You know, it has roots, okay. Dhanyapata, even the dhanyapata he wouldn't eat. So I didn't tell him that rice, you know, there's a jiva in the rice, other rice. Because he loves rice. His father was about to tell him. I said, don't tell him. Otherwise, what's he going to eat? You know, so mostly all he eats is rice. Anyway, and so this consciousness is there in Śrīla Prabhupāda and those who are devotees. Number four, paragraph four, not deviating from Krishna's instructions. Aryans do not deviate from the instructions of Krishna, nor do they have doubts about Krishna. But non-Aryans and other demoniac people fail to follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. This is because they have been trained in sense gratification at the cost of all other living entities. So this is obvious, our training in the Western culture especially, that what is our training? What is the purpose of everything? To enjoy. What is the purpose of Christmas? To get toys, to get presents. What is the, now, and they'll start shopping from November and December. But their purpose is to enjoy. So, and the training in the school, you get knowledge, you go to college, then you can make more money, and you can enjoy. So that's the whole purpose. It says that in Bhagavad Gita, right? There's a verse somewhere, the aim of life is sense gratification, 16th chapter, somewhere, goal of life is to enjoy. I don't know the 16th chapter so well. You know it?
Yeah.
Oh, kama is all over the place.
Satisfy lust.
Yes. Kama Parayana, I think. Kama Parayana. We have Vasudeva Parayana, and they are Kama Parayana. Kama Parayana. They are surrendered to Kama. They are working for Kama. They are serving Kama. Just like we are surrendered to Vasudeva. Huh?
Kamopa Bhoga Parama.
Parama, goal of life. The Parama. Kama Krodha Parayana. Anger. Lust and anger. They are the followers of Kama and Krodha. Just like we are Vasudeva Parayana, Narayana Parayana, Krishna Parayana. They are Kama Krodha Parayana. So this is the opposite of Bhagavatam. Yes, Vasudeva Parayana. We are Narayana Parayana. Paragraph 5. This verse therefore advises everyone become a member of the Aryan civilization, accept the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should conduct his social, political, religious affairs according to his instructions. We are spreading Krishna conscious movement to establish a society the way Krishna wants it. This is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. We are therefore presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is and kicking out all kinds of mental concoctions. So verse 44. Mm-hmm. Yes.
His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj, he in a very witty way speaks about this Aryan concept in this book, Searching for Vedic India.
Vedic India. Okay, Devamrita Swami. Vedic. Concept of the Aryan.
Yeah. And then he explains historically how the Europeans kind of at some point were intrigued to hear about the Aryans and understood this is incredible human civilization.
Yes.
Who is it in Europe? Is it the Germans? Are it the English?
Yeah.
Or who is actually...
Who is the Aryan?
Who is an Aryan?
And they wanted to be Aryan.
And then the Germans at some point...
They wanted to be Aryan. That's why the war was there.
And the whole... Because it was all based on the linguistic interpretation. Of,
yes.
No understanding. It was
no understanding.
Biological. It's a race. So Maharaj writes how they're playing with this concept without proper guidance,
yes.
Then to the point where the bombs fell on London.
Okay, so the bombs fell on London because of their idea of Aryan.
Because the Germans, they started to conclude they are the Aryans and they take
right.
over the whole world.
Yes,
so
but
because of their
linguistic and scholarly playing around with that.
Right. Sanskrit, they had some Sanskrit knowledge.
They always imprint that there is an Aryan, an Aryan race, and
yes, they concluded there's an Aryan race. And the Jews also, they thought they wanted.
Basically, they wanted to prove the whole world, so they had to draw bombs on London to find out the picture.
So this is the danger of misinterpreting the Shastras. This is very dangerous. Of deviation, danger of deviation, misinterpreting the Shastras. So that's why we have Srimad Bhagavatam. It's giving us Aryan. So anybody who wants to know, you meet anyone, you can say, here are the points, here is the Aryan. If you want to know who is an Aryan.
In essence, it's a society which is spiritually progressive.
Yes, spiritually progressive, Krishna conscious. So, verse 44, my Lord, is a wonderful verse. It is not impossible for one to be immediately freed from all material contamination by seeing you, not to speak of seeing you personally, merely by hearing the holy name of your Lordship. Only once, even Chandalas, men of the lowest class, are freed from all material contamination. Under the circumstances, who will not be freed from material contamination simply by seeing you? So here again, there's got to be a verse for the holy name. Anywhere, every chapter almost, there's a verse glorifying the holy name. So here's our verse today for the holy name in the prayers of Chituketu. Again, along the lines of being non-sectarian. In the Hindus' caste system, then they condemn the Chandalas and they're also giving them so much trouble. And that's why now the Chandalas are giving the others trouble. Because and they take to communism, they take to other things. So here, everyone is accepted in this Bhagavad Dharma. And that's why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had problems with the Brahmins in Navadvipa. That he was accepting Haridas Thakur, born in a Muslim family, as Namacharya. And that's why Srila Prabhupada had problems. When he came to India with his Western devotees, then they were criticizing that, you know, oh, they're Mlecha, they're Yavana, how can you make them Brahmins? But this is Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is saying, even Chandalas, they can be freed from all material contamination just by hearing the holy name once. Only once. Not even chanting. Yes? Where? Ramanujacharya had problems. Okay, so Ramanujacharya, they tried to kill him as well because he was accepting people from all castes in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada, in the purport, explains this about the middle, after the quote, a little bit down, about Lord Chaitanya, introduced this chanting of the holy name 500 years ago. Now through the Krishna conscious movement, Hare Krishna movement, we're actually seeing men who are considered to belong to the lowest class are being delivered from all sinful activities simply by hearing the holy name of the Lord. Samsara, material existence, is a result of sinful action. Everyone in this material world is condemned. Yet, as there are different grades of prisoners, there are different grades of men. All of them, in all statuses of life, are suffering. To stop the suffering of material existence, one must take to the Hare Krishna movement of Sankirtan, or Krishna conscious life. So that's the one paragraph. And the next paragraph is all about deity worship. And there will be a verse, I think, maybe this afternoon, I think, about the two forms of the Lord. One form is the holy name, and the other is the deity of the Lord. So herein it said, Yanama Sakritchavanat, holy name of the Lord is so powerful, if once heard without offenses, he can purify the lowest of men, Kirata Hunanda Pulinda Pukasha. Such men called Chandalas are less than Shudras. They can also be purified simply by hearing the holy name of the Lord, not to speak of personally seeing the Lord. From our present position, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be personally seen as a deity in the temple. He's non-different. Because we cannot see the Lord with our present blunt eyes, the Lord has kindly consented to come before us in a form we can see. Therefore, the deity in the temple should not be considered material. By offering food to deity, decorating and serving the deity, one gets the same result one derives from serving the Lord personally. So there are so many verses. We've read these verses over and over again. And this is the answer to the people who put forward arguments against the lower caste men becoming Brahmins in this life. This verse is one of the answers. There are many such verses. Also, fifth canto, we read one. Vidura Vigata is the same thing, Chandala. And Prabhupada gives the reason why. Does anybody remember why? How, scientifically speaking, how this is so, that a low-class person can become a Brahmin even in this life. Prabhupada is a very, very scientific explanation. Dhammakrishna?
Changes the
subtle body. Yes. Changes the subtle. When you chant, you change your subtle body. The gross body, you don't see the change. You may not perceive. But by chanting, your subtle body is changing. And because the subtle body changes, then you're freed from your bondage. Because the bondage is the subtle body. So the gross body is just a manifestation, but the subtle body is actually where our karma lies. And it takes us from to our next body. So verse 45. Yes, 45. Therefore, my dear Lord, simply seeing you has now wiped away all the contamination of sinful activities and the results of material attachment and lusty desires, which always filled my mind and the core of my heart. Whatever is predicted by the great sage Narada Muni cannot be otherwise. In other words, I have obtained your audience as a result of being trained by Narada Muni. So what did Narada Muni say? About what did he predict? What was his prediction?
7 days
you will see the Lord. Just chant this mantra. So Prabhupada has also given us a prediction. If you chant your 16 rounds, follow four negative principles in this life, you will go back to Godhead. So all you have to do is just do that. Chant 16 rounds and follow the four negative principles. And Prabhupada will take us. Will take us back. So in the second half of the purport, with our blunt eyes and other senses, we cannot perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if we engage our senses in the service of the Lord, according to the instructions of the authorities, it will be possible to see Him. As soon as one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all sinful reactions in the core of one's heart are certainly vanquished. So this reminds me of a verse, just reading this. Oh, he probably, yes, yeah, no wonder it reminds me, he quoted it. Atashi Krishnamadi Nabhave Grayam Indiyai. You cannot perceive the Lord with your gross senses. But by chanting, the Lord reveals Himself. So how does the Lord reveal Himself to you when you chant? Actually, Prabhupada says on the tongue. Or by hearing also, by hearing. By hearing. We will hear Krishna before we see Krishna. We all of us, most of us think we have to see, and that's realization, but actually it's hearing. Hearing is, yes.
Service.
You what?
We may chant, but we don't appreciate Krishna there. The ability to do service.
Okay, so you appreciate Krishna, Krishna's presence when you do service. Okay. And the ability to do service is coming from the chanting. So in that, it's all connected. Yes.
When you are chanting, you ask him some particular scripture, they say that some service, Krishna immediately.
Yes, when you chant, you're asking if you have some specific service, Krishna immediately gives. And even if you don't ask some specific service, Krishna immediately gives. The more you chant, the more service you get. Actually. Okay. Verse 46. So unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, whatever a living entity does in this material world is well known to you because you are the super soul. In the presence of the sun, there is nothing to be revealed by the light of the glowworm. Similarly, because you know everything in your presence, there is nothing for me to make known. So who's the glowworm here? The jiva. Okay? Light of a glowworm. 47. My dear Lord, you are the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this cosmic manifestation. But persons who are too materialistic and who always see separateness Do not have eyes with which to see you. They cannot understand your real position, and therefore they conclude that the cause of manifestation is independent of your opulence. My Lord, you are the Supreme Pure. You are full in all six opulences. Therefore I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So here it says, materialistic person sees separateness, cannot see you. So what's the separateness that the materialistic person see? What is this separateness? They always see separateness. Yes.
Desire to enjoy
separately from Krishna. Okay, that's one separateness. Yes?
They like to see only material things, not spiritual. So they're separating between mental and spirit, but they like to be only...
They see things, they only see the material actually. They don't even separate matter from spirit, they just have matter. Yes, Madam Puri.
Because we cultivate a separative mentality, our status from being the servant becomes the competitor.
Yes, so because we cultivate the separatist mentality, then we become competitor. We forget our real position.
And then Vaya.
Yes. So, yes. Followers of Karma Mimamsa.
So no one takes care of me, only I perform activity, and the results of my activity with my rights, so it's, I'm independent, I know my future.
So no one, I control my own future, and no one takes care of me, and I just do my work, and that's it, I get the results. Karma Mimamsa. So these are two materialistic persons. Who else sees this separateness? We got the Karma Mimamsas.
Jnanis.
Separate interest. Karvis, yogis, mayavadis. Who?
Sadarshan,
yeah? Six darshans. Except for Vedvyas. Vedvyas. Sometimes Vedvyas is put in there. That's one of the six darshans. But mostly, yeah. Mostly they are against. Okay, and then what we have now in our modern world, who do we have?
Demons.
Demons. But who are these demons?
Scientists.
Oh, the scientists. Are they? They are. They have taken the place of God. Yes.
Everybody's demons.
Prabhupada said everyone's a demon. So they were, everyone in the audience was saying, but this one and this one, Prabhupada said, yes, everyone. Everyone's a demon. So that's why there were not so many followers of Srila Prabhupada in this world. So I have something here about the scientists. I don't know why I put it here, but I guess it's because they see separateness. And this was actually a devotee was debating with one scientist. His name was Dr. Kovur in Sri Lanka. You know, did you hear about that? It was Hansa Dutta was debating with him. And then his final statement I have here was quite interesting. He said, here is my challenge to Dr. Kovur. Actually, this Dr. Kovur, he had an institution that was disproving all religions, something like that. He was challenging all the religions and all kinds of beliefs and trying to prove there was no God. And he would, and then he took up ISKCON. But he got defeated, actually. So they were going back and forth in the newspaper. It was pretty hot. So here is the final statement of Hansa Dutta. Here is my challenge to Dr. Kovur. Let him inject the appropriate chemicals into a dead body to bring it back to life. Or let him inject the appropriate chemicals into himself to check his own death and restore his old and worn-out body to its youthful luster and beauty. If he finds this task too difficult, perhaps he could just produce a simple form of life like a mosquito or a bedbug. Better still, let him recombine the chemicals of the praying mantis, so there was one insect he cut off the head, and bring it back to life. Or is a science of Dr. Kovar only a one-way road to destruction of life? And maybe science is not yet ready with a one-step process by which to produce life as a finished product. If this be so, let Dr. Kovar merely make a plastic egg, inject it with yellow and white chemicals, incubate his artificial egg, and thereby produce even one chicken that could go on laying eggs and produce more and more chickens. So in the newspaper they had a picture of this Dr. Kovar sitting on top of an egg and trying to hatch it. They had him trying to hatch one egg. His egg that he made, and he was sitting on it, trying to make it come to life. Even this task may be a little too difficult for Dr. Kovar. Perhaps then he could simply produce a drop of milk or a grain of rice by chemical combination. Then we could start taking him seriously. So anyway, this is very nice preaching. Prabhupada, he sent this to Prabhupada. This is 78, but this was while Prabhupada was here. Hansidutta was in Sri Lanka. And he was debating with this big guy, atheistic person in Sri Lanka. Huh? Did he? He committed. Oh, how did you know?
I heard that from
Mumbai. Oh, isn't Bhakti Godhead?
What happened?
He committed suicide, this guy.
Who, Dr. Kovar?
The Dr. Kovar. So, defeated. Mm-hmm. He committed suicide.
The life comes from life. He died later.
Hmm?
He says he died.
He said he died and life comes from life.
The debate was just over and somehow at some point he died. So, yeah. Then there was the last comment.
He couldn't save himself. Okay, he died then. Life comes from life. Okay, anyway, the conclusion is the same. Whether he committed suicide or not, it was either Krishna got him. Krishna got him. He was defeated in the end. So this is the final defeat for everyone who, all the atheists who are against Krishna, the defeat is death. Now they can say so many things, but when death comes, what will they say? And they have no idea where they are going, because they think, what do they think? After this life, there is nothing. Because it's only chemicals. So who would lament for some chemicals? Verse 48. My dear Lord, it is after you endeavor that Lord Brahma, Indra, and the other directors of the cosmic manifestation become occupied with their activities. It is after you perceive the material energy, my Lord, that these senses begin to perceive. Supreme Personality of Godhead holds all the universes on his heads like seeds of mustard. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, that Supreme Personality who has thousands of hoods. So there's a very interesting statement in the Chaitanya Bhagavat again, Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse 37. And this is in the purport, actually, about the glories of Balaram, or Sankarshan. And it tells where you find the glories of Balaram in Srimad Bhagavatam. 10th canto, chapters 34 and 65. 5th canto, chapters 17 and 25. 6th canto, chapter 16. So these are the glories of Balaram, or Sankarshan, found in Srimad Bhagavatam. Then there is a statement: those who are indifferent to these descriptions can never make advancement on the path of devotional service. So we have to be very attentive. In spite of their material intelligence and mundane knowledge, which is a product of their own mental speculation, such people are unable to appreciate the topics of Sri Baladeva or Sankarshan, who is the source of all Vishnu tattvas. So actually, Sankarshan, we're hearing about a lot about Balaram. Balaram is the origin of Sankarshan. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 5, conclusions are given. Sri Balaram is the counterform of Lord Govinda. Balaram's expansion is Maha Sankarshan. Marginal potency of the Lord is the Jiva. Maha Sankarshan is the shelter of all Jivas. So he is the shelter. He is our shelter, Sankarshan. His fragment, Purusha, is counted as a Kala, or part of a plenary portion. The first Purusha casts his glance at Maya from a distance. Thus he impregnates her with a seed of life in the form of the living entities. So this is who we are worshipping in this chapter, Sankarshan, who is coming from Balaram. 49. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "The Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Anantadeva, being very much pleased at the prayers offered by Chitraketu, king of the Vidyapadas, replied to him as follows, O best of the Kuru dynasty, Maharaj Pariksit." So this afternoon you'll hear from Raja Prabhu all the instructions of Lord Sangarshan. Very, very interesting instructions, I found. Any questions or comments on today's verses? Last, it's quote Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi. No, that was Chaitanya Bhagavat Adi 1. That just says chapter 5. And it doesn't, yeah, it doesn't give the verse. So any questions or comments on the verses for today? Or any glorification of Sankarshan Balaram? For our, anything more about Balaram? Everybody's... No questions. So we can end the class early today. If nobody has any questions, you can have time to chant your rounds. And you have 20 minutes before 12. Enjoy. Hare Bhagavan. Bless you.